Excuse me, John.
I know,
excuse
I'm waiting
me, John.
For you. I'm waiting.
I wanted to be a lady, but welcome to Shaken and Disturbed, everyone. I am Derek Harp here with Salamander Sam. John Thrasher, you just did this. Guys,
I know.
If you look this on YouTube, you can smash that subscribe button for more Salamander Sam. But we are here at Shaken and Disturbed. I am in New York this week, which I'm super excited about.
So the
little East Coast. So you can tell John and I are on the same time zone, as you can see, because we're both
as you can both
hair.
Tell.
But my video quality is a little bit different. But
not bad.
I just wanted to tell everyone, hey, you know, welcome to Shaken and Disturbed.
Oh, lovely. What a beautiful intro, even though you were basically about to cuss me out.
Well, I wanted to get into the case, but I feel like you have to complain about something.
Well, first of all, I'm wearing a hat today. If you're watching on YouTube or Patreon,
Wait. Is it Wanda?
Ahead. It is. It's Scarlet Witch hat. It's a Scarlet Witch logo.
Do I get props?
No, I don't think so. No.
Oh, okay.
You should know by this point.
Cool.
My hair was just not working. Like before the show, I was like trying to put it together. And I was like, I don't think this is happening
the
way I would like it to.
Can I see it? Can you take it off? Just for a second. Just for YouTube. Just for a second.
Gosh.
Of all the bad thumbnails you do of me, you deserve
Oh my God, whatever.
You get one.
Your thumbnails
you get
are
one.
Great.
You
okay,
get
here's
one.
I'm not it. This will not be the thumbnail, but you can just see.
It's not what
it's just not styled. It's just
flat.
That's
just
my
flat.
Thing. Yeah, it's just flat. And I couldn't get it to like shape the way I wanted to this morning. So I'm like, you know what?
Guys,
I'm going to do it. It's going to be a hat episode today.
It's going to be a hat episode. It's Diva City over here.
Hats are in. Can I tell you, kind of connected to Wanda, can you guess what season has officially arrived? Now, early August.
Of Wanda?
Not quite. Although Agatha All Along, which you talked about a little bit on the Patreon NMR, go listen to it. Darren
covered
some things.
Yeah, guys, if you want to hear me talk about Disney that I actually covered, listen to our Patreon this week because it was shocking.
Who you only covered because of me, but you have to go.
Yeah, no, but like we don't give you credit on the regular episode just for patrons.
Remember
we talked about that?
That's right. We did talk about that.
Right.
No, I'm really excited to announce that my favorite season of the year has arrived, and that is called Bath and Body Works. Mm-hmm. Vampire Blood is back in stock, ladies and gentlemen.
I thought you were going to be like pumpkin spice something. Are we doing?
I know. Here, I'm doing a free plug because I love it so much.
Vampire
Blood. It's a scent, or as I used to call it to you on the show, a flavor.
Yeah, it's a flavor. You say candles have flavors, and I was like, "Are we eating them?"
Which I said to a friend when I was frantically excited about this scent, and he literally went, "Did you just say flavor?" And I started cackling. I was like, "Oh my God, I did the same thing to Darren." She called me out on the show. Vampire Blood is a scent at Bath and Body Works, and they have it in hand sanitizer. They have it in a 3-wick candle. They have it in foaming soap. They have it in gel soap.
If you had to describe the flavor/scent of Vampire Blood in three words, what would you use to describe it?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm trying to see.
He's looking on the bottle right now.
I'm looking on the bottle
just to cheat because he can't do it.
No, I'm not cheating. I just don't think that they have an actual. I want to say I've heard that it has a note of plum. Let me just take a smell. Yeah, like maybe like a plum, but not as like fruity and over the top as plum. Guys, listen, and they're not a sponsor of the show. They have not bought an ad.
I've never even heard of it, people.
It is my all-time favorite scent, and I load up on it every year, and I still have my hand sanitizer. This might have been from 2 years ago, actually. But nonetheless, so I want to just say that at the top, and I also want to say just very quickly, and we're going to get into the episode, that they have the cutest black cat Halloween decorations that I am going to buy.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'm going to paint a little white little dot on the nose so it looks like magic. You must go to Bath and Body Works and smell. You know what? If you go to Bath and Body Works and you smell Vampire Blood and you report back to me on the Facebook page, Patreon, wherever, I will give you a very specific shout out on next week's episode. That's how passionate.
But if you guys buy Vampire Blood and you fucking hate it, I will give you a special shout out. So
Darren has
don't
a special
lie to
place
us,
for
but
you.
Like I will have a special little place for you. And by the way, speaking of shout outs, loving all the Beanie Baby S&D
we're gonna get to
content.
Those.
We love all that. So I just want to say that up top because we haven't forgot about about you guys. But yes, okay, Vampire Blood.
Vampire Blood, check it out. And unfortunately, there is some blood that is connected to this week's case. Although I don't think any vampires.
Are you ready to get into this week's case?
Let's do it. Let's get
into it. Okay, it's a little bit of an oldie, but a goodie. During the mid-1930s, a string of gruesome murders shook the Cleveland area that remain one of the city's most horrific unsolved cases to this day. So, spoiler alert, it's unsolved.
And it's, by the way, spoiler alert,
maybe you can help.
It's gruesome. Just be aware. That's not a hyperbole.
Ago.
Yeah.
So some people refer to these murders as the Cleveland Torso Murders, which kind of gives you a hint as to what is going to be involved. Others just call it the Torso Killings, but this case is most prominently referred to as the Kingsbury Run Murders, which doesn't sound as gruesome as Torso Killings. But
yeah, Torso Murders are a little bit much.
You see what you get with that. But these horrific murders claim the lives of 13 victims, and only three of these victims have ever been identified. So... And it's interesting how they know it's 13. I don't know how possibly you could rule out anyone else. I guess it's obviously the way that they kill people. But just the fact that even less than a half percentage of these have been identified is super tragic and unfortunate. So all the victims were decapitated. Obviously, that's going to create hard identifiers, given the fact that they were decapitated. And in some cases, the heads just sort of remain missing. They never found the actual head. The bodies would be dissected at the torso. So this granted the killer the moniker the Cleveland Torso Killer, or the Mad Butcher of Kingsbury Run. And in the 1930s,
sorry to interrupt you. It's just like, isn't it so weird how, like, I mean, we still do this as a society. We want to like come up with like monikers and names for these kind of things, but especially in like the early 1900s, there were all these like very almost like sci-fi sounding monikers that people would come up with. And I'm like, I don't know. It kind of rubs me the wrong way. Like, you know what I mean? I understand.
Because we're like glorifying it. Like,
not necessarily
like making
that.
Entertainment.
Not even, I mean, maybe it is a little bit of entertainment.
There is a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like
the butcher of something doesn't, you know, like that. It is sort of making this into like a hockey player.
Yeah. And I'm also wondering. Yeah, exactly. That's my point. But I'm also wondering if I'm reacting to that and like this was like the norm. You know what I mean? As a true crime podcaster and someone who consumes documentaries that have similar names like this, you know, maybe I'm just conditioned in the weird way. And this isn't that.
Well, I certainly think it's a branding thing for media. You know, I think it's meant to sort of terrify you. I think that's the media's job, right? No one's
Shock
ever reporting
you.
Good weather, right? It's always like Hurricane Irene is here again. Like it's never like, oh, we've had the lowest recorded whatever. So it is a media tactic, I think, to probably get people to make aware and to probably scare them a little bit. So it's marketing. It's marketing. Yeah. But in the 1930s, the Cleveland neighborhood of Kingsbury Run was a menacing area, home to many residents of low economic status, often vagrants and sex workers. You can kind of get the idea. Just a lower class, poorer neighborhood, not as bustling and a little bit more blue collar. And east of this neighborhood sat the Roaring Third, which was an area filled with gambling, brothels, bars. Now, keep in mind, in the 30s, there was an economic depression in the United States. There was prohibition in the United States. I understand that, so there's a lot kind of just shittiness happening. Obviously, the mob was formed from prohibition. So there's crime, and it's crime ridden in the 30s.
That's good context. Yeah.
In September of 1934, the remains of an unidentified woman was discovered by Lake Erie.
Now, I want to mention about Lake Erie because I live in Pittsburgh.
I've never been to any of the.
Oh, really?
No, I've never been to any of the homes,
Huron,
Ontario, Michigan, Erie, Superior, right?
Oh, yeah. I never even thought of it like that. Yeah.
Homes.
Yeah. Have you never been to Niagara Falls?
I've never been to Niagara Falls.
I thought you have before.
I thought I did too. And then I think my mom, insert Zooey's notes right here.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Which one is it? I got to find it. Hold on.
And here are Zooey's notes.
That I haven't been to Niagara Falls. So there we go.
Right.
Yes.
There we go.
Yes.
Well, I've been to Canada a few times. I have some really good friends up there. And when I was in college, we played a tennis team. I think it was Penn State Erie, actually. And we got snowed in to our hotel. It wasn't even a snowy day, But you know, like the lake effect snow that's just like so cold and the moisture creates snow. It was just barreling down on our hotel. Like the town was fine. Everything looked good otherwise. But this
It's like
one
Truman
hotel,
Show where it's just like
yes,
right
it was
on you.
almost literally like that. Our van was snowed in. It was an otherwise a completely normal day. So I always have these like weird, these
You have
eerie feelings
eerie
about
about
Lake
eerie.
Erie because like it was just like such a weird thing to happen. But anyway.
We could have named this podcast Eerie and Query, but we didn't.
Eerie and Query.
Because we
That'll
aren't
be our
queer.
next show. We're going to launch a new
That's our
show.
spinoff.
Yeah, that's a
Yeah.
spinoff. Yeah.
When John pisses me off and I need to go do another show by myself, obviously that's gonna happen. It's gonna be Eerie and Query.
Eerie and Query.
So only some parts of her body were present at the site where she was found, including her torso, her thighs, which were amputated right at the knees.
Oh,
So already this is
God.
telling me this is someone who knows the human body and knows how to do this. It's not like anyone could
Yeah.
just like amputate this stuff. The majority of her body was missing, including her head, and her body was doused in a chemical, which was often used to preserve items. Her remains were never identified, but she would later become known as the Lady of the Lake,
I
which is
mean,
interesting because Apple TV has a show out right now called Lady in the Lake, with
oh.
Natalie Portman, based on a 1966, I believe, Baltimore murder that happened.
Okay.
So interesting there.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of monikers, like I was saying. So in September of 1935, one full year later, a second victim was discovered by two teenagers at the base of Jackass Hill in the Kingsbury Run
That sounds
neighborhood.
right.
Yeah, that sounds about right. This time, the victim's remains were male. His body was found. He was naked, decapitated, his genitals removed, and his blood drained. His wrists appeared to show signs of rope burn as well. However, this time, the headless victim was able to be identified as 28-year-old Edward Andrassy. Edward was known to be a regular around the Roaring Third when he wasn't working at the hospital as a ward assistant. A third victim was discovered later the very same day. That body was an unidentified 40-year-old male who was also found decapitated and, well, emasculated, for lack of a better word there. The body was also doused as the same in the same chemical that was used in that first victim. So somebody is like planning these murders, right?
Or
Because it's
preserving the torso long enough, because why?
exactly.
It's not like you're trying to save the body. So I don't really, it's not like we're at a funeral home or it's not
Right.
even a Dahmer situation in which he's kind of like eating and
Yeah.
cooking them and experimenting with them. They're just dousing them in this chemical. It doesn't really seem to do anything, at least
Yeah,
right now.
exactly. And it also tells you though that there is some planning involved because they
Yeah.
and a routine and a behavior, which I think will become an interesting point. Well, in January of 1936, the remains of a fourth victim, Florence Polillo, was discovered wrapped in newspapers, then placed in baskets, which were left to be discovered outside of a manufacturing building. It kind of makes you wonder if that was intentional, if, they're obviously not trying to dispose of it necessarily.
Right, they're not clearly getting rid of it. They want to be seen to some, they want to create a mystery. They have
Yeah,
to.
I think that's what I would take it as. Now, Florence was also a sex worker and a waitress who frequented this Roaring Third area. So lots of people being found in all different types of ways over the last couple
Shady
years here.
business in a shady area.
Yeah.
And in June of 1936, the decapitated head of the fifth victim was discovered. The head belonged to an unidentifiable man. At least we sort of know that it's not sex-based. Like it's,
Right.
I mean, I guess it could be, but it's not just women who are not just female
Right.
sex workers that are being harmed here. The head
Right.
was wrapped in a pair of pants near the 55th Street Bridge in Kingsbury Run. The remainder of the body was later discovered on the railroad tracks in front of the Nickel Plate Railroad Police Building. Interesting for the body to be found in front of a police building. This says to me that this person definitely wants to create an uproar about
Yeah.
what's going on and wants to do it sort of in plain sight. That says something to me.
I agree. Yeah.
Now, here's what's interesting. The body had tattoos, which earned the name Tattooed Man in the press. Now, tattoos
The
are a great
press.
identifier. I mean, if you're ever taken, we're always hearing
Yeah.
about this. You remember birthmarks, you remember tattoos, because those are very specific identifier marks that you don't necessarily need a head or anything else to figure out. Now,
Right.
according to the Cleveland Police Museum, quote, a plaster reproduction of the man's head, along with a diagram of the kind and location of the tattoos, were displayed at the Great Lakes Exposition of 1936, end quote. Could you imagine this?
I know. And I think I've seen this. I looked this up. If you look up Kingsbury Run, you might be able to see this plastered head. We don't want to like post it anywhere.
Could you imagine doing this today?
I know.
Like, you could never do this today. Like,
no.
What's even more interesting, because tattoos, and even in 1936, I don't know why I'm saying this, but I feel like they were less common. Like, people didn't have tattoos in the same way that you have now.
Yeah.
It feels less frequent, but more than 100,000 people saw the death mask and the tattoo chart, but the tattooed man was never identified.
Can I just add something really quickly? I did just look this up, and it's extremely disturbing. So, guys, if you want to be spooked...
Can you send it in the chat so I can look at it?
Yeah, I'll send it in the chat. Yeah.
Send it in the chat. Now, the original death mask, along with three others from the case, are on display at the Cleveland Police Museum. I don't even know the legality. I don't think
that's like, good.
Maybe because they've never been identified, they can sort of do this. I'm going to check out that chat.
Yeah, check it in a second.
Now, the sixth victim was discovered in July of 1936 and was identified as 40-year-old male, but his name still remains unknown. Yeah. Interesting how you can kind of know the age of a body, you know, but bone structure, wear and tear on the muscles, all these things.
Right.
Upon discovery, detectives were able to figure out that he'd been dead for 2 months. Maybe this is why they kind of need that formaldehyde thing, because to me, if the torso is going to be dead for 2 months, depending on where it is, it would be certainly decayed or eaten at or something. Right. Furthermore, they were able to deduce he had likely been killed in the same location he was discovered, due to the amount of blood on the ground, which is pretty interesting. Now, this was quite different from other bodies, all of which had been moved after the victims were killed.
Yeah, which I think those are all very important parts to trying to figure out who is doing this, because the behavior, you know, of how
disposes
of the body. That's okay. Darren's reacting to the plastered face. Yeah. Tattooed man or whatever it's called. Guys, look it up. We'll put a link in the show notes if you really want to check it out.
And then down, they have like kind of a sketch of what he would have looked like.
Yeah.
Which is even crazier.
Creepier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as details of the crimes became increasingly public, suspicions rose that the killer may be a medical professional. And the city began to question where all the unidentifiable bodies were coming from.
Because, as we mentioned up top, cutting through a human body is not easy. It takes precision. No. You kind of know where to wear and tear the muscles. You have to kind of know how to do that. So
absolutely.
That's why I think the doctor is not a bad call.
And did you just, I don't know if you just mentioned this and I zoned out, but the chemical alone, I mean, how are people accessing that? You know,
I didn't mention that, but it's a really good call.
Yeah. So media outlets were reporting on the case updates daily, and Cleveland detectives began spiraling under the public frenzy. Detectives interviewed over 1,000 people as they worked the case. 1,000 people? That's actually crazy to me.
That's insane.
The police force began sending officers undercover to survey and assess the area for potential leads. So in September of 1936, a man actually tripped over a torso while trying to hop a train.
What is this, New York?
Yeah, exactly. Now, police force began sending officers undercover to survey and assess the area for potential leads. Police searched a nearby sewer for remains, but came up empty-handed. Again, remember, this is the 1930s. There's not as a sophisticated reconnaissance technology just yet. In February of 1937, the next victim was discovered, an unidentified woman in her 20s, who just turned up just east of Cleveland. In June of 1937, a few months later, the ninth victim, Rose Wallace, was discovered under the Lorraine Carnegie Bridge. Mm. Her remains were different from the others and consisted of only bagged bones and a skull. This is very dark. This is getting very dark.
That, though, only bones and a skull. I mean, that would take a lot of time and precision
and effort,
to do this. Yeah. This is not someone who's just like, this is like ritualistic.
Yeah, I agree.
For them.
Well, in July, a month later in 1937, the remains of an unidentified man, mid to late 30s, was discovered along the Cuyahoga River. His heart and organs were missing.
Jesus.
The next victim, an unidentified woman, was also discovered in the same river. However, this was the first reported case of drugs being in the victim's system. Which is interesting because, you know, with given that, you know, the whole stereotype about sex workers and the drugs and everything, it's surprising that this is all happening in connection to that area, but there are no drugs until this person. Well, right. It is unclear, of course, whether the drugs were used as part of her killings or they were consumed recreationally before her death. After the discovery of this latest victim, Cleveland's mayor, whose name was Harold Burton at the time, began pressuring safety director Elliot Ness to solve this case. I mean, I get that. It's one after the other. And regardless of what their social, economic status is, who knows who could be next, really. Right. Ness was well known for his part in the busting of Al Capone, actually, and the Mayfield Road mob. Darren, you were just mentioning mob development at that time as well.
Yep.
In response, the killer left the 12th and 13th victims outside of Elliot Ness's office window. Talk about making a statement.
So this is a little threatening. And to me, this says, like, this might be, just from that alone, this might be a revenge killing with that mob. I mean, if this guy's putting away Al Capone and other mobsters, those other mobsters might be doing this just to fuck with the police.
Yeah, 100%.
Because them leaving it outside of Elliot Ness's, that sends a message to something outside police station, outside Elliot Ness's. This is not random. It's not random.
That's what I was going to say. It's not random. Yeah.
So in the early hours of August 18th, 1938. So what is that,
another
John?
Year
90
so. Yeah.
years ago, basically.
Well, yeah, right.
86
yes.
years ago. Ness organized a squad to raid Kingsbury Run in search of the torso killer. Now, according to the Cleveland Police Museum, quote, Elliot Ness and a group of 35 police officers and detectives raided the homeless encampments in Kingsbury Run. 11 squad cars, 2 police vans, and 3 fire trucks descend on the largest cluster of makeshift shacks where the Cuyahoga River twists behind Public Square. Ness's raiders work their way south through the run, eventually gathering up 63 men. Now, at dawn, police and firemen searched and deserted shanties for clues. Then, on orders from Safety Director Ness, the shacks were set on fire and burned to the ground, which doesn't really feel, it does feel like you're stereotyping. Again, it's a rough neighborhood, but this doesn't really feel like a homeless person would be doing this, because this would require a lot of tools and time and energy, and seems like it would be sort of the opposite, more of like a doctor-ish type if we're just using stereotypes here, but especially to burn this homeless encampment after, it seems very cruel.
That's a bit crazy, yeah. I mean, the other thing is, if, you know, think about the homeless people that, and what their resources are, especially, like, are they the type that are going to try to send a message to Director Ness? Like, I don't know that really would, I mean, again, I'm just kind of, I'm playing along here as we figure it out. Yeah, because it just doesn't feel like that's the right profile to me personally.
It doesn't either to me, but maybe this is just like them showing that they're doing stuff to the public, right? They're showing that this is a menace society, so this is a virtue signaling, if we will.
Well, and also it could have just been an excuse to raid the home, because there's a long
also
history
been
of that happening too.
Now, it's rumored that Ness was doing this to get these populations out of the area, like John mentioned, and was criticized for these actions subsequently. But whether or not the rumors are true, the killings did cease after the August 18th raid.
Hmm.
Okay. Now, in the midst of the chaos, 2 prime suspects surfaced in this still unsolved case. In July of 1941, County Sheriff Martin O'Donnell arrested bricklayer Frank Dolezal, much unlike, I don't think related to Rachel Dolezal, but we don't know.
Maybe.
For the murder of Florence Palillo, who was the 4th victim. Now, Frank was the former roommate of Palillo and was familiar with Edward Adrossi and Rose Wallace. Okay, so a little bit of connecting the dots here. Now, Frank confessed to the murder of Florence Palillo, but then later recanted that. And according to Cleveland Police Museum, quote, his confession, quote unquote, turned out to be a bewildering blend of incoherent ramblings and the precise details, almost as if he had been coached. Before he could go to trial, Frank was found dead in his cell, which again, to me, says way more mob-like than anything else.
100%. Yeah. I mean,
a random person does not have sway in a jail cell.
No, not at all.
Nope. The 5'8" man had hanged himself from a hook only 5 feet, 7 inches off the floor. Gerber's autopsy revealed 6 broken ribs, all of which had been suffered while in the sheriff's custody. Again, broken ribs, not happening from a hanging. So clearly a beating is going on. Now, to this day, few believe that Frank Dolezal was the torso killer. He might have been put up as a pawn by
Yeah.
Just guessing here, a mob, could have been someone inside the police department that was doing this, because maybe they had the inner hand with the mob. Maybe they were getting cash from the mob and so knew where to drop the bodies, knew how to do it, knew how to keep all of this. So a lot of underhandedness could have been happening right now. We just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing about these cases from like the early 1930s is you don't really have the same type of detail and frankly, evidence and forensics that you kind of do even, you know, 20 years later. So
absolutely,
you know, you got to sort of take all this into consideration as we get through this episode and as we wrap up this case. So the second suspect was Dr. Francis E. Sweeney, or otherwise known as Dr. X. Again, this could be a Marvel show. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just so much drama.
It's good. This is what D23 announced for 2028.
This is what D23 is. That's right. Listen to our NMR episode to know what we're referencing there. Well, or look at my hat because of hello, WandaVision. Thank you.
Obviously, hello.
Like I was saying, he was discovered to be Elliot Ness's secret suspect. As a medical doctor, he would have had the anatomical knowledge and resources to perform the mutilations that were suffered by each of the victims. Dr. Sweeney's office was also located adjacent to the Roaring Third District and across the street from a funeral home. In fact, there's a theory that this may have been where the bodies were coming from. A funeral home? Are you kidding me? That's so unsettling. Dr. Sweeney's own wife had reported her husband and his medical practice for neglect, abusive tendencies,
yeah,
and a drinking problem.
Well,
you know, that's a recipe for disaster, if you ask me.
I would think so.
Perhaps the most damning piece of evidence in this is that the fact that as soon as Dr. Sweeney checked himself into a mental institution, the murders stopped. In 1956, the doctor was formally diagnosed with schizophrenia. I would say that's an important part here. Allegedly, in May of 1938, Ness secretly apprehended Sweeney for 10 to 14 days at the Cleveland Hotel. And while this was before Miranda rights existed, this still violated the actual doctor's civil liberties, of course. It was there Leonard Keeler, the inventor of the polygraph, actually administered a lie detector test, which the doctor twice failed. Now, again, 1938, I'm just saying, it's who knows if the polygraph test, you know, it's still to this day not really admissible in court, but especially in 1938 when it's just being developed, it may not be the best use of technology. But
right,
nonetheless, Keeler was quoted saying, quote, "That's your man. I might as well throw my machine right out of the window if I were to say anything different," end quote.
Damn.
Ness had to deal with the discovery carefully due to Francis E. Sweeney's relationship to Congressman Martin Sweeney.
It's always, John, it always comes back to fucking politics and police
and money. Yeah.
And just money and corruption. It like always comes back to that.
Absolutely does. Or life insurance. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Sweeney was released, and a few months later, the final victims were placed outside of Ness's office window, as we were mentioning, taunting him. Now, Ness never had enough legal evidence to indict the doctor for the murders, and actually, Dr. Sweeney was never charged. And, you know, as we wrap up here, these brutal killings in the Kingsbury Run neighborhood, you know, still haunts Cleveland as one of its most, you know, criminal cold cases, and perhaps due to the fact that the crimes, you know, remain unsolved, is something that is that a lot of people are still thinking about.
And to me, like, it's the no motive. It's not having any sort
of
motive. Like,
yeah,
like, you know, there's some people who are like, I think sex work is terrible, so I'm going to kill all the sex workers. Completely disagree with that. I think
or
that's horrible
people.
And immoral, but at least I understand. At least there is like something. When people get brutally killed and there's just no rhyme or reason, and it's
and
not even
mutilated,
a specific,
yeah,
they're being mutilated and specifically being killed in a way that would not solve the case, just says so much cruelty to me. And so like a schizophrenic doctor, I mean, that's almost perfect, too perfect as a solve. And maybe that is the answer. And maybe it's also just coincidence that the murder stopped and the other guy was close in his office and wanted to pin it on this person. We have no idea. It could have been the wife of someone. It could have been a woman. We're saying it's a guy, but like, it just, the sheer just randomness of it is what would still haunt me.
Well, the schizophrenic doctor who lives across the street from a funeral home with a drinking problem. I mean, that's the setup. That's the start of like a really interesting crime book, if you ask me.
Agreed, agreed.
So, really, really tough and disturbing details here. Let us know what you think about the case. Hit us up at Jay Thrasher at Carpe Darren. Hit us up in our Patreon and hit us up in our Facebook group. We're all over the place. If you guys don't know where we are at this point, what are you doing? You know what I
I
mean?
mean, yeah, we're together in bed and having a baby. That's it.
Well, I don't know
Absolutely.
about that.
100%, guys. That's the truth. Thank you. Let's wrap it up,
Thank
John.
you. By the way, check the links in our show notes if you want to click into those. Darren, let's get into some listener shout outs as we wrap up this kind of quicker than usual episode, but you know, they can't all be 9 hour episodes.
Yes.
Darren, a reaction pic of me from our NMR episode went up on Patreon the other day, showing me
Yes.
reacting to your bug bites photo as
That's
in real
correct.
time as we were recording in that episode. It had many responses, and I want to shout out to Mitz, who said that even hearing about it gave her goosebumps. So, do you want to give everyone a final, maybe a final update on how you're recovering from your? We still don't know what insect it was. I
We
actually think
still
it was a
don't
horsefly.
really, we really don't know. You think it's horsefly?
I think the way, guys, the
They were itchy.
way,
Do horseflies itch?
well, once you get bitten, I would imagine, regardless, yeah, I mean, the way the skin was like damaged on your
It looked like I
leg.
got burned. It looked like I
It
got
looked like
burned.
you got stabbed with a knife, actually. Like some of the cut, like I don't know.
It
That
was the
shit's weird.
mosquito mob killers, and they
Yes,
are on the run, and
exactly.
it's unsolved. It's just unsolved. My bites, thank you for asking, Mitch, are much
Yeah.
better and completely healed. You can't even tell
Okay, good.
anymore.
Okay, good.
But yeah, my mom, like, I sent her those pictures, and she was just like, "Do
Yeah.
you have gangrene?" Like, she was like, "Are you dying?" That's
Something,
what
yeah.
because it just didn't look right. So I appreciate all the well wishes.
Can I say something? Would you be offended if in the future I show a close friend?
I would not be offended, no, because
Okay,
now
because I
that it's
did
all,
do that.
oh,
Because I
okay,
did
great.
do that.
So what if I said yes? Would you admit
I
it?
know, I would have told you I didn't do it. But I did say, I just need you guys to look. You know, I was like worrying about
And
you for a second. They gasped and screamed.
okay,
Because I did exactly
they're
how I did exactly
not
what you.
blind.
Well, I did exactly what you did. I explained that I was attacked by mosquitoes, and then you showed me the image, and I had an absolute panic attack on the show, and it was the exact same thing. We are all just looking out for your best interest. I
I
didn't
appreciate
even,
that.
you know, there was nothing. You know this person. I won't say who, but you know this person, so there's nothing to worry about. But glad to hear you're recovered, and it doesn't look like you've been attacked.
No, I'm fully recovered, which is why I'm okay talking about it now.
Okay,
But
good, good, good.
many of our sussy radishes on Patreon, our most dedicated fans, received their physical gift in the
Oh
mail this week. This is what I
yeah.
was referencing up top, and which were our true crime Beanie Babies. Instead of tie, we did S&D little tags, which were so
Yep.
cute. They came with a custom tag that says SD, like I said, and a morbid poem about how that Beanie Baby was, in fact, possibly, most definitely, but not proven in court, a
A
murderer.
murderer.
Now, Sandy, Roxana, Molly, Denise, Paula, Mitch, others all showed them to us. I loved all of them. You guys had such like the cutest comments to say about it. They turned out so great. I
I'm so
really love
glad.
it. Of course, I told my mom and I was like, "Mom, everyone got their Beanie Baby." She goes, "Okay, so when's another gift? Because we have another round." Like, my mom was like ready to clean out the
I
closet. So.
know. And, you know, we may end up doing another wave of these for other Patreon members because there are, you know, you sent me a whole box of them. We didn't send out every single one of them, but I actually loved Molly's post on our Facebook group. She said, quote, "I'm loving seeing everyone's gifts. If it sounds like many of you are getting ones that match your life, and my gift fits perfectly at my house too, with two children who are part of the queer community, Cheery, which is the name of the bear, fits in very well. Here's Cheery." And she posted a picture of it. It's a cute little bear with rainbows all over it. Now, I
Should
do
named
want
it
to
query. Just
query,
saying.
cheery, eerie.
Just
Exactly.
saying.
I do want to say I did, if you signed up to receive a true crime Beanie Baby earlier this year, I also, for most of you, I also followed up and asked you what your favorite animal was. And
Just in case.
just in case, and I had it all in a spreadsheet and I really tried to match the
Someone was like,
beanie.
Princess Diana.
Yeah, exactly. I love Princess Diana. It's my favorite animal.
What's the most expensive one? I like that one.
Yeah, exactly. Which one can I sell on eBay for $10,000?
Exactly. Exactly.
But I did try to match, you know, we've come to know you guys to some degree over the years, and I tried to match as best as I could. I know one of you, I think it was Denise got Egbert, the little chickadee in the egg, and she has like a farm with a whole bunch of animals. So I think it was Denise. I hope I'm not forgetting that. I'll check after the show. Sorry if it wasn't you, Denise. But nonetheless, it was really fun. We're glad to finally get those shipped out to you guys. We're already planning the next physical gift, which I think we're going to try to do over Halloween spooky season.
Spooktacular.
Exactly. And Darren, tell everyone what they need to do if they want to get their physical gift from Patreon.
Like we said, we're trying to keep it towards Halloween. So we're going to give out the physical gift later this fall and you won't want to miss it. So sign up for our highest tier known as Sussy Radish on Patreon and you will be eligible to receive your gift.
And you can sign up at any tier. You know, there's, I think, four different tiers of varying levels. But we want to keep that physical gift exclusive to the top tier. So if you can contribute that way, it really does help the show. We so appreciate all of you guys. We're so lucky that we have so many of you guys that care so much about us and keeping the show going after all these years. You can head over to patreon.com/shakenanddisturbed, all one word, or just click the link right in our show notes.
That's right, Johnny boy.
Darren, I'm gonna go. I'm excited to take this hat off and just, you know, live my normal life.
Keep without it on. Having
without exactly oh, without being did I say that out loud? You. Yeah, I would like to not be bullied by you, so I'm going to go. You guys, go take your vitamins. I just took a zinc vitamin right before the show, so please do take care of yourselves, okay?
Well, that's my you guys got to check your pits, especially if you have a penis. And just a reminder, and this one's to John Thrasher specifically. John, please stop eating hot dog weenies out of the package. Like, please. Oh, it's so annoying when you do that every time.
Okay.
So please stop doing it every record because it's like it's starting to get gross. Yeah. And like I just want to look out for you.
Yeah. So. Okay. Got it. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for always looking out for me.
You got right, it. Your pits and your weenies. I've got it, John.
Look for Darren on the Today Show, guys. Listen to her on Sirius and all the other places. Yeah. See you next time.
Bye. Bye.